This is the App Hour Podcast, recorded May 30th, 2011. Episode 45, Nerdy Neuroelectronic Neurosis.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gammel of Chris Gammel's Analog Life.
Hi. And we have a third member of the team today.
We do. Sort of.
Kind of. Well, he's only a couple of weeks old.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so how's it
Little
going?
Little Sagan.
Papa
Dave.
Yeah,
that's my new news.
Woohoo! Yeah.
The video's up. If you haven't seen it, the video of my latest neuroelectronic project.
And we will, like, of course, post that in our show notes, of course, as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yes, I have a little baby boy, Sagan, his name is.
Yes.
And he's sleeping at the moment, but you may hear some cries in the background. Who knows?
Yes.
I doubt it. He's actually been around for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So. And Chris has known for a long time, and he's kept his mouth shut.
You have. I'm impressed. Thank you very much.
I am impressive with myself, I have to say, because I'm very crappy at keeping secrets.
a few people knew. I noticed Jerry blurted it out on Twitter
at one point. Yep.
She did. Thanks, Jerry.
Nah.
That's all right. I didn't get anyone actually catching on to that, so maybe no one listens to Jerry's tweets. I doubt it. No.
Okay, I doubt
There's
that
lots.
Too. Yeah. So how's it going so far, though? I mean, first off,
awesome.
We should clear this up. So Sagan is after Carl Sagan, is that right?
Pretty much, yes. After Carl Sagan, the famous astronomer and astrophysicist.
Yep. That's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah. I love it. Well, we wanted an unusual name. So, you know, with Jones being the last name.
Yeah,
I didn't want something ordinary. I wanted something I could get the domain name for. So,
Did you buy that already?
I did. I'm now the proud owner of SaganJones.com.
Man, growing up with a website the whole time. I'm sure that happens out there, but I've...
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
I'm one step away from the Truman Show.
Oh, there you go. I love that movie.
Oh, it's great. I know.
Yeah.
And I did actually briefly consider that, and then I thought, too much work. And, it's pointless.
Get those advertisers, you know.
Yeah, it works much better on television than it does in real life.
Yeah, I mean, you could set up a Ustream channel, but there's always that fine line. I mean, that line is blurring, of course, between people's personal lives and online lives. I mean, but especially with kids, too, where they don't have a choice, you know, so...
Well, exactly. I mean, speaking of Jerry again, she's got a camera running 24/7 in her shop, doesn't she?
She tore it down for
years.
For a while.
Oh, she did she?
Yeah.
Why? Just got sick of it?
Because of the blank, blank, blank contest.
Oh, right. How did that correlate?
Oh, because when we were doing the Ustream, the final announcement thing, she tore up her rig in order to record like she used to do with Fat Man and Circuit Girl.
Oh, okay.
And so she just hasn't had a chance to put it back together. But
got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've considered that too, but it's boring as batshit.
It's tough, man. It's tough. You know, like even talking to other people and you know, like Dino does that in his shop too. And it's tough because if you're actually doing work and you're like over a circuit board or soldering or something, it's tough to interact and even...
Yep.
And unless you're interacting, it's kind of boring then. So then it's just about the people.
Well, exactly.
In the chat
room. So there's no point. So, otherwise you end up spending your whole life on there. So
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to do that.
Yeah. That's understandable.
That idea was dropped pretty quick.
So how soon will Sagan have a soldering iron in his hand?
I don't know. That's dependent on the wife approval factor.
Ah, okay. So maybe a toy soldering iron to start. You know,
possibly, yeah.
Start
a little
turning
fluffy
up the temperature
multimeter.
Each month.
Yep.
Really get used
Somebody
to those burns.
Somebody suggested on the comments on YouTube we should get like a little fluffy toy multimeter. I did a quick search and there's nothing out there.
Really?
There's no like toy fluffy oscilloscopes or multimeters or anything.
There
I didn't
you go.
Check soldering iron, but
you know
gee,
what you need to do is hook up with you know Make Magazine. There's
Craft
Magazine is the
is there? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe talk to some of those folks, see if they're because they're all I mean like and they're true to their name. I mean, they are crafty. Yeah, they make some
craft
cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure someone can craft a multimeter in an hour, right? You know,
Well, I don't know about
some
that.
Some stuff wadding and, knit a thing and then sew some
dials
and knobs on and stuff. Dial, because it's got to be a dial, right?
Well,
digital rubbish. You know, I got to start him out on an analog.
Yeah, oh, well, yeah, yeah. You know, you don't want him to break it at first, right? Yeah, I like that idea though. I mean, there's definitely a nerd niche to be filled there, you know, like
I think so. I'll have to do it.
My buddy has a set of flashcards for, and I don't know if they're actually for the baby or so much as the parents, but it's like, you know, there's a counting flashcard set and there's a letters flashcard set, and there's some nerdy stuff on there. I mean, it's like Maxwell's equation.
Oh, okay. Maxwell's equations.
Yeah.
Einstein's equations.
Yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. So
it's
pretty nerdy. And there's a lot of nerdy stuff out there, but I guess no stuff multimeter yet.
No, which is a terrible shame, I think.
Well, maybe you'll be the first. That's got
to
be a small market
to
play to.
If you're a crafty person out there and you want to make me a fluffy multimeter, I'll certainly promote it for you.
Make me content and I'll advertise for you, right, Dave?
Right, yeah.
There you go.
Exactly, because I can't craft for shit, so.
Yeah.
Well, I've never tried. I don't think I've tried to craft something like that. I don't know.
There's the next stage in your life.
Right, I'll be sitting in my rocking chair just knitting away.
There you go, man. Knit one, purl one. Excellent. Knit one, purl one.
Right. Awesome. Anyway, it's very fun. They're a bit disappointing, though, because they don't do much.
They don't.
They just sort of eat and sleep, really.
Yeah, once they get to two, though, they're going to be a terror.
Yeah, they start engaging and wanting to learn stuff. And that's when you can manipulate them.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah, that's fun. That's real fun.
Yep. And then they hit 16 and tell you to piss off, don't they? Is that
I think that's what I think that's what Paul Clark said on Twitter today about 11 and 13. All they do is give negative feedback constantly or something like that.
Right. Okay. So I'll have to get him the t-shirt.
Yeah. There you go.
Right. Brilliant.
There you go. Now you can start printing your t-shirts for in baby clothes.
In baby clothes. Yeah, I think you can get them in from the Zazzle store. You can get them baby type ones. Yeah.
Nice.
Done.
All right. All right, there you go.
In a future blog, you'll see him in a t-shirt. And if you've got any good ideas for t-shirts, let me know.
Yes.
Excellent.
Well,
anyway, they are
congratulations if I didn't say otherwise. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
I think I've said congratulations, but I'm sure the Amp Hour audience is very glad to hear it too.
Yep.
So what about the future of the Amp Hour, though? So we're going to keep going?
Yeah, we're going to keep going. He's in there sleeping.
So 1.5 hours a week, the wife's going to cover for you, and... the Amp Hour shall continue.
Or he just sits out there crying his eyes out. Well, you know.
He's got to learn. You don't interrupt the radio
toughen
show.
Toughen him up. That's right.
Yeah. I'm sure the children...
No, it'll still go on.
Yeah.
So the show must go on. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I shot the show and I was, first day back from the hospital or something? First
That's
morning?
That's true. That's true, yeah.
Yeah. And I managed to squeeze in an
hour
there to do the show.
That's when Jeff and Jeremy were on. I had them lined up.
That's
because...
right. You had them lined up because you expected me not to be there. But
right.
We got back from the hospital on the Monday night.
Yep.
On the Monday. And late on the Monday. And
well, we got our first chance to have four people on the show, though.
Up.
So, yeah, that's good.
Excellent. And we couldn't just boot someone at the last minute, could
no,
we?
Of
so we
not.
Ended up with four, you know. Once you invite someone, that's.
Well, especially not Jeff or Jeremy. I mean,
well, exactly.
Yeah. But we will be looking at more guests soon. So, you know, there's a thread actually on EEV Forum that we can, we'll post a link up there. But if you have more suggestions about people to invite on, you know, we're working on some people. But, you know, if you have anyone in mind that you want to hear about, I think maybe we've promoted that on here before. But I'll throw a link in there, too, about you know, how you can suggest people on the forum. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, what do we got this week?
Please do. All right. What do we got?
Unless you want
to
talk about
Sagan. Shout out
Sagan
to me.
There
we go. Shout out to Sagan.
I mean, do you have anything else to say? I mean, other plans for electronics in the child's life? I mean, are you making any funky baby monitors or anything like that? I mean,
well, I do have a baby monitor, but the wife doesn't like it because, you know, it emits radiation. She doesn't like it. You know, she doesn't like having a Wi-Fi transmitter right next to the Really? Kid's head, you know. So it's a meter away. It drops with the square of the distance.
I know. You should just get the whiteboard out and explain it to her.
Yeah, exactly.
Come here, darling. We're going to talk electromagnetic radiation here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Next up will probably be a blog on an EMR sensor. I'll probably get one of those, and she'll make me sweep the whole house.
You know, we have actually had a suggestion on the show before about people that are electromagnetically sensitive and how it's just...
That's right. We had it on the list for quite some time.
Yeah, and I was just at my fiance's house or family's house and they have cable there, and there was a show about it. And I was just like, oh my God, like, really? The same day we're recording the Amp Hour? And... It's a little ridiculous. Nothing against your wife. I mean,
I haven't really investigated it much, but I do believe there is something in it. I'm sure a lot of it is, you know, psychological, kind of stuff. But I do believe there is something in it, and certainly, you know, if you have a cell phone against your head for cell phone, Jesus, being Americanized here.
Throw it in the trunk.
For, you know, 5 hours a day, if you're a traveling salesman, then, good luck to you, because, RF heating of cell tissue is real. So,
right. And I'm not saying there's no chance.
That's a problem.
I'm just saying that the people that are really, they were showing people in Sweden that were like, they were like living like Luddites, and they said, "Oh,
yeah, well, exactly.
I've developed a rash on my neck because, you know, you've got your video camera near me," and they had to switch over to like a lower power camera or something like that because these people are that adamant.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But they,
so, yeah, I don't know. That's a lot of that is psychosomatic,
yeah.
I'm sure.
I think it is too. Because then they show a double blind experiment basically where they have a person in an anechoic chamber, which is, you know, for RF radiation stuff.
RF anechoic chamber, yep.
Yep. And so the person's sitting there, and there's a screen, so they can't see past the screen, and then there's an antenna on the other side, and they turn the antenna on and off, and they ask people if they can feel the difference. And basically, there is no statistical...
Zip, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
I could have called that from a mile away.
Yeah, I mean, but as far as, long-term health risks from under power lines and stuff like that, you know, they could certainly, apparently it leads to an increase in leukemia and all that sort of stuff.
The problem with that is the time.
There could certainly be something in that, so I certainly wouldn't live under a set of power lines, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's got the automatic play gym for the kid, man. I mean, I'm just saying.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Monkey bars.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fluoro tubes. I can run around with the fluoro tubes.
Smash
and light
them against
up.
Stuff. Yeah. Oh, like that.
Yeah.
Oh.
All the mercury comes out. Hey.
Yeah.
Great fun for all the kiddies.
Just have the Tesla coil run in the backyard and have them light up the tube with different distances.
Yep.
A little closer. A little closer. There you go.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's our rant on EMR.
There you go.
Electromagnetic sensitivity and, radiation.
If your wife makes you do a sweep, I would be interested in that, you know, picking that up or, you know, seeing what kind of things you can pick up.
Well, because you can get meters, you know. You can buy them from X-Tech and other companies like that. You buy these low-frequency EMR radiation meters.
Huh.
It is a real instrument. You can, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah, these aren't toy instruments. These are real instruments for real problems when there are problems with, you know, things down at that sort of frequency.
So do they target specific frequencies and then they, like, rectify it?
Oh, yeah, low ones are, like, under 200 kilohertz or under 200 hertz or something like that. Yeah, really low-frequency stuff, so, yeah.
And they're not, like, swept, though, like a spectrum analyzer or anything like that?
Oh, I'm not sure how they work.
That's how I would do it. I would try and sweep frequencies and see where you see spikes, right? That's the...
Yep.
Something like that,
but
you know, probably like $100 meter.
Maybe I can get one from X-Tech and
there you go. Yeah.
And investigate.
There you go. That'd be interesting.
As opposed to RF radiation detectors, which are a dime a dozen, you know. For bug sweeping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
but ones at the really low frequencies, they're the ones that are hard to do research, you know. On you can, you know, at really, you know, 50 hertz radiation or 60 hertz in the US from the mains wiring and stuff like that.
Yes.
Whereas you can easily show that a cell phone that, you know, heats up cell tissue, you know, when it's pumping out a watt you know, yeah, 5 centimeters away.
They don't do a watt anymore, do they? I mean, they're in the microwatts.
The peaks are, yeah, of course.
You're talking GSM, yes. Though, right? Is that why?
GSM, yep. Oh, well, okay. CDMA, yeah, it's a spread spectrum, but gee, you know, I still wouldn't like to have one against my head for 5 hours a day.
I agree with that. Better safe than sorry,
even if it's loaded.
Yeah, even if
crap,
you can,
right? No. There has been lots of studies on the cell phone thing, and there is a correlation between tumors and cell phone radiation. So
really? I thought they proved it the other
way. Still to be conclusively proven. Well, there's a couple of studies that show not, but there's others that show, yes, there is a correlation and stuff like that. So
yeah,
there's more than one, actually. So yeah, I don't think it's all bunk.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's super healthy.
No, that's right. All right, what do we got? Any more shout-outs?
Yeah, a couple shout-outs. So there's actually a new podcast. We always have people kind of asking us, hey, we listened to the Amp Hour this week. It's only an hour. Can you guys do more? And the answer is, Dave's a dad now. Sorry, guys. and before that,
yeah,
it was no, too.
I don't know.
Too.
Should we do more? Feedback in the comments, please. Will people get tired of it? Will we run out of shit to...
I don't know if we'd run out of stuff to talk about, but maybe if we didn't have people on here, that it would just start to be more of a full-time venture than, you know, if we had people on every show and we'll always have to deal with. Anyways, I would be interested in that too. So if people want to leave comments about that, more Amp Hour, please. Anyone? No? Yes?
No.
Let us know.
There we go. Deathly silence.
Yeah. So there's a new podcast from EE Journal, which is
another... I saw that. Had a quick listen.
Yeah. Not too bad. It's short.
It's all right. What's her name? Amelia, is it?
I believe so. Let's see. Yeah.
Amelia. Amelia Dalton. Yes, it's a girl. Yes.
Bonus.
But it's just her, and it sounds scripted.
A little bit. That's okay, though.
It's like she's already done a blog post, and she's just reading the blog post. Right. I'd be surprised if it's not actually scripted.
Yeah, it seems like more like
it,
a,
that's
like a
what
news
comes
update.
Across to me.
That's how it hits me.
It's like a news update thing. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's another that's another form of. Not everybody wants just to hear people like us drawing on. So it's a news update. So it's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it sounds very similar to some text bloggers that not just read, but some of them do an audio version as well. So they'll write their text blog and then they will do an audio. Over that as well for those who prefer an audio podcast of each post.
Oh, interesting.
So they will just they will actually read out their post and they won't add anything extra. There'll be nothing
so, like,
added. It'll just be
so like if you're just like listening in the car, you can throw it on.
You can can have it auto download to your iPod or your iPhone or something, and you can hear it in your car. You can read your favorite text blog in the car.
You know, my commute's not that long, but I actually really like that. I mean, like, I listen to talk radio anyways, but, you know, like, I think it's great. You know, I'll put on an e-book, or an audiobook, rather, and just let that, just do it in 10-minute chunks sometimes, and that's pretty awesome, so, kind of.
Well, the thing with blog posts is that they're usually quite short, you know, so they're all over in, like, 1 or 2 minutes, so.
Yeah.
Very quick.
Yeah, that would make it tough if we actually tried to script all this junk out, huh?
Right, it'd be impossible.
That's why we just talk about other people's stuff.
That's why we just wing it and babble on. And yep.
Yep. Oh, man.
Anyway, it's good. Yeah. They need a proper website. Like, I'm just looking at it. You just put up a link to the archives section or something. Is there an actual web page for it?
I haven't found it yet. Someone else linked me to it, so I haven't found it. I think it was John Shook. So
okay,
I'll poke around a little bit.
It needs a dedicated, page site.
Fish,
I'm sure it's probably
fry.
Got one where just two done. Oh, there it is. No archives, fish fry.
Yeah,
it's actually in the archives. So there's a drop down menu on the Electronic Engineering Journal site, and.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole site for
maybe
it.
Maybe it's not a new show. Maybe it's just archived. I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, anyways, if people are interested, there's a whole new site. There's a Amp Hour alternative for you out there. Another one, because there is that electronic design show as well.
So, which is still going, is it?
I believe so. Yep, I haven't listened in a while.
Right, okay. Have they changed anything after our negative feedback of them?
Don't think so.
No, I don't think so. They've still got the... the monotonously read ads and the...
No comment.
Reading white papers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Anyways, next shout out. So, Lucas.
Good luck to him. Variety, right?
Oh, yeah.
Spice of life.
Yep.
Some people might like their papers read to them.
Yes. So, another shout out. Lucas Weekly, who has been a Workbench of the Week alumni. He linked to us from his site. So, thanks a lot.
And what does he do weekly? that's his last name.
That's his last name, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lucas.
Yeah.
I didn't catch on. Yeah. Right. I thought that was the name of your site, Lucas, and it is, but it's not spelt
right.
Weekly, as in day of the week.
Right.
Weekly, but Weekly.
Yep, that's right.
Dolt. Okay, I'll just shuffle off to the quiet corner of the anechoic room here.
Well, don't get quiet, because we got some ranting to do.
Oh, awesome. I love to rant.
All right.
About what? I don't care.
So... Internet bubble is not necessarily coming back, but it's on the rise. You know, so you got the Facebooks and everything else out there.
Yeah.
But LinkedIn, the site where you throw your resume stuff up there, $9 billion. How did a site that makes nothing and has the worst ads in the world get to that point? I don't get it. I don't get how that happened. And I really don't want the tech bubble to come back. I don't know about you.
Simple. It's the same old formula. It's complete and utter bullshit.
Yeah.
End of story. You know, it's...
The only positive I thought about it is, you know, at least, you know, this is my memory of the run up to the crash, like so 97 through like 2001, whatever. You know, it was exuberant, right? There was people buying and selling like crazy on these stupid stocks. And at the end, though, obviously it all fell apart. So go ahead. Oh, okay. So it seemed like there was two things there. You know, you could if you knew what you're doing, you could get in and make a little bit of dough. But the good thing that came along with it is...
A little bit?
You could make
an absolute buttload of money.
Right.
A lot of people did.
Yeah. But then you had to keep it out of the market, too. That was the other key.
Well, it literally did not matter what you bought back during the tech bubble. It went up. You doubled your money.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've said this before. I was in there during the tech boom, and I was sitting at work. Everyone would, at lunchtime, they'd go check their share portfolios.
Yeah.
And I'd check mine, and I'm going, holy shit, I just earned more today than I will work in for this whole week. What the hell am I working for?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's when day traders came up and everything. I remember that. Yeah.
That's, you know.
That was a mess.
Yeah.
So from that, you can make some money for later. So you can make it for a rainy day, basically. But another thing that came out of it was there was all this investment in other types of companies too. So you know that's when they laid a lot of the optoelectronics lines or optical lines rather, which then enabled all the 2000 stuff with a lot of outsourcing overseas, which is its own thing. But there was a lot of hardware investment as well. So basically, you know, it's kind of like a rising tide. Floating all ships kind of thing, where if there's a lot of money in the market, it's going to help hardware companies and these silly software companies.
Yeah.
But, man, $9 billion.
I know. It was nuts. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Tell them they're dreaming.
I know.
Is the, yeah, it's like, classic Australian expression.
I don't.
Dreaming.
I don't get how that happens, but, you know. If people do
it... Well, because... it's a valuation, right? Which is just pie-in-the-sky stuff. They haven't been offered, have they?
No, they have. They opened already...
Oh, did they turn down an offer?
No. This is... They went public, so they were a private company. They had an initial public offering.
Oh, right.
And however high the stock went, you know, they... You know, so all these...
Oh, okay. Times the number of stock... That's their valuation. Oh,
right.
Okay.
So $9 billion.
I'm with it now.
Which is huge. I mean, it's not how much the company is necessarily worth in total dollars. It, you know, but it sort of is. I mean, like if someone wanted to buy them out and they wanted to buy all the shares, they would. If they wanted to take them private, it'd be $9 billion right now. So it's crazy.
Just wait a couple of weeks. It'll
maybe, it'll but drop. Still, it's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, IPOs are another thing. After the tech crash, you know, there was a complete, almost stop in tech IPOs, regardless of whether or not it was software or you know hardware or anything for half a decade at least. It's even still happening now. People are still scared to do an IPO. there's, you know, companies doing anything to have up until, well, even now, they're doing anything to avoid doing an IPO. They'll get bought out privately by Google or Microsoft. That's the new model. Whereas back in the, you know, the 80s and the 90s and during the tech boom, the IPO was the big thing, right? That's how you made your money back to your – that's how your investors made their money back. But, you know, IPOs are few and far between now. So it's very interesting that they actually did an IPO in its own right.
Well, yeah. And so this next story is interesting too because it is a hardware company. So Freescale – so LinkedIn – $9 billion, some company that doesn't make anything. Basically, they are glorified monster.com and, you know, social networking pushed together. People know about it.
What's their actual income? What do they actually make?
I don't know.
How much do they make? Well, the data must be out there. There's no way you can do an IPO without having your income publicly available out there. So it's, you know.
Oh, it was, here we go, $15.4 million in profit last year.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's that's reminiscent of if people remember pets.com, you know, these sites that didn't do any. I mean, not that LinkedIn doesn't have value. It's just not
as
$9 billion.
Okay, I can give you a reference there.
Yeah.
Okay, Altium, my former company, at their peak, they were making about that each year in clear profit.
Yeah.
Right? And they were on $50, $60 million income or something like that. Yeah. They were making large profit margins because they're a software company. Their overheads were low at the time before they decided to go stupid. Anyway, let's not go there. they were making $15 million, yet they were only valued at, you know, even at their peak, they were only valued at a couple hundred million dollars. So you can see how, you know, LinkedIn at $9 billion with only $15 million in profit is just nuts.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yes.
And look where at Altium as a, once again, as a reference point, because I know it, it peaked at $5 a share. It's now worth 10 cents a share.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Make of that what you will.
Yeah. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Did you say I said 15 million, you know, right? With an M?
Yes. Okay. 15 million.
Okay. I thought you said billion. Yeah. All right.
No. Million. Okay. No. Altium's not that big.
No, I know. Okay.
Not even close.
So that's the reference point now. Software company, $9 billion. Now we have a hardware company, Freescale Semiconductor, which was taken private previously. They were bought Blackstone. Blackstone as a private group. They you know, leveraged a bunch of money to buy this thing out. And, you know, I use these parts at work sometimes, and they scared the crap out of me when this all was happening. And now they went IPO as well. But now they're worth, like, a billion.
Instead of how much?
Instead of $17 billion.
So they went newly IPO at $17 billion, and now they've dropped.
Yeah.
17 times to $1 million. A billion, sorry.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. So, I don't know if there's engineers sitting in these investment firms doing this crap, but if they are,
Or if engineers were dumb enough out there, I like Freescale parts, I'll go invest in their IPO.
Yeah.
No, IPOs are designed to suck money out of gullible people for the investors. They're not designed to make the new investors in the IPO any money.
Yeah.
So, be aware of that.
I don't know what I'm trying to say with all this stuff other than it's ludicrous. You know,
it's a crock of shit. Yeah.
Other than, and then watch your back. You know, if you can make some money, make some money. But, you know, you can lose just as easy, people. And
get the hell out. Yep.
And if you're starting a company, make something. Please, for the love of God, just make something. You know, like that's the message here. You know, I really love that – you know, there's all this, like, micro manufacturing kind of going on, like all the – a lot of electronics stuff and everything else. And even with the 3D printing now, I don't know if it's ever actually going to take off, but I love it just because people make stuff. You know, that
– yeah, because it's cool. Yeah,
that's not right. Even cool. It's just – it's tangible. It's important, you know? It feels like it's more human nature than – $9 billion for a resume site. I know LinkedIn is more, but man –
Well, you know, granted, LinkedIn is an important site, but yeah, it's just not worth that amount of money. It cannot sustain that.
Yeah.
But with revenues of $15 million a year, profit, yeah. sorry, not actual revenue. Revenue's higher than that, I'm sure. Well, it has to be to make a profit.
Yes.
Financial advisor, Dave.
Dave's been going to business school. It is off time.
I have.
Yeah.
And, it's just there's no way it can sustain that. There is no model that it can suddenly take off and sustain that. It's literally impossible. So anyone who invested in that is just mad. Crazy.
Or
it'll always be a speculative amount.
Yeah, exactly. They're hoping to make money.
That's how the entire stock market works, is a speculative. It's a speculative. The share price is a speculative figure over mm-hmm. what your actual company worth is.
Right. So future earnings. It's people saying, it'll be worth.
You know, for a tech company, it might be 20 times earnings or something like that. But for a sensible bank or something, it might be 10 times is the actual, is the industry ratio.
Yeah. It's all based on growth and everything else. And I think that's why they like software companies too, because it feels like you can grow faster because all you do is throw more programmers in there,
course.
And then you're bigger.
Yeah,
it's like not really. I mean, there's more to it, but it is maybe harder to scale up manufacturing, which is the whole other beast, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Hate that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. What can you do but sigh and? Yep. Anyone who invested in, Serge, you're right. If you invested in Freescale at, $17 billion IPO, tough titties.
$17 billion buyout, actually. Yeah.
Oh, buyout, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And, the thing I've learned is that companies, the share price can always go down. And I can tell you exactly what figure it can go down to.
10
cents. It is nothing.
Too.
No, it is actually nothing.
Nothing, that's right.
They can go out of business.
Yep, that's right.
Especially software companies who don't have any tangible value.
All you got to do is sell off the laptops.
They can just disappear overnight.
And, not getting a lot of money for those.
Most of those are rented anyway.
Yeah, and if that money's probably going to the backers first, and so if you own the stock,
that's right. Yep.
Good luck with that.
Yep.
Anyway, it's interesting. Like, should we actually be interested in this stuff, right? So there's this article about how engineers are kind of getting demoted. Not demoted. That's the wrong word. But criticized in popular culture. So it's on construction.com is this site, and so they're talking about civil engineers in this case.
Okay.
But basically, they're talking about how engineers are. At least in construction, they're requiring less certification of engineers in for drawings and everything else, so that then they can demote the importance of engineers. And this writer, his name is Rakesh Tripathi. He's like railing against it. He's like, well, would the American Medical Association do this kind of thing, or the American Bar Association? Yep. It's like he could not believe that this kind of thing happens. But you see this every day where engineers are not necessarily chided or called out, but it's engineers are less important than they used to be. Let's just say that much.
Well, walking aside,
I don't know.
Stick it up your ass. No, they're not.
I mean, but it's also because engineers are less likely to want to get into politics, right? So engineers say, well, I'm not going to politics. I want to keep making stuff. And so when politicians go and demote engineers' importance, then, what are we going to do? Yep. We don't have anyone in there. Or when engineers get taken advantage of during IPOs, we're not investment bankers, except for, Jeremy's friends that are going to Wall Street. But we're saying that they're not really engineers anymore because they're part of the system. So, how do you – I don't know how you really do that kind of thing. I don't know how to deal with that other than people – biting the bullet.
You can't. We just have to keep doing what we do, and that's it.
Maybe.
Telling people to stick it. Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, should engineers band together and start lobbying? I mean, at least in the America, I don't know about other places. That seems to be the only way stuff gets done in America, at least, is there's, the American Medical Association and the Bar Association, they have huge lobbying groups where they have tons of money that goes towards getting their agenda put through. So You're not going to find doctors that aren't licensed, or...
Well, you're not going to find the IEEE out there picketing.
No, well, IEEE is...
The White House, are you?
No, they do lobby, but...
Oh, they've got some clout, yeah, I'm sure, but, well, they think they do.
Yeah, I don't know how much, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I have to take you to task there. You mentioned the Bar Association twice. You're not seriously comparing lawyers with engineers, are you?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of...
Come on!
What? I mean, like...
You're going to be kidding me. Lawyers are the scum of the earth.
Well, it's an important association, though. You know that the Bar Association...
No, it's not. Lawyers. It is. We talked about this last week. Aren't lawyers the most... No, that was to marketing people, right? Anyway, same thing. I'm going to lump marketing
where's my
people
list?
And
where's
lawyers
my list?
In the same...
No, I mean,
you know, the comic we did last week about them, you know, if we
corporate
come
finance.
To the apocalypse and end of the world, who's going to save the world? It's going to be the freaking engineers, right?
That's true, but
it's not going to be the damn lawyers.
That's true.
They're
it was
useless.
It was a corporate
what do they
finance
do?
Thing.
Nothing.
You're right. I mean, you're right. That stuff
they
maybe
just
doesn't
stifle
matter.
Stifle us. That's what they do.
But you know, at the end of the day, the engineers might be saving the world, but after it all turns around, it's going to be that corporate finance or their corporate lawyer. They're saying, "Oh, where's my share?" You know, like so. So, from that perspective...
And then we'll tell them to stick it up their ass, and it's a new world order, and you guys don't exist
maybe,
anymore.
Maybe. Yeah. When there are no laws, there are no lawyers, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting article.
When the zombie apocalypse comes, right?
Yeah. It'll be the guy that knows how to work or to design the new zombie shotgun, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, then you start up the military-industrial complex again. Well, oh, God. Yeah. A vicious cycle.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
All right.
I give in.
Okay. Mm. All right, well.
Enough of that.
Yeah. So, what else we got on this week's show? Because obviously that was a dead end with Chris running into the brick wall of Dave's hatred of lawyers.
Right.
Even though your brother-in-law
is
one, isn't he?
The world's smallest 3D printer.
Yeah, this was an interesting article. I think Adafruit posted that one, right?
Yeah.
You know, I had posted this because it looked kind of... I saw a 3D printer and very small, and I was thinking, printed circuits, anybody?
Ah. You're right up there with the forecasters for these IPOs.
Yeah.
You're dreaming.
Yep.
Anyway, I don't really have a huge gauge on how small... Oh, yeah, they're holding it up there. There's a photo of them holding it.
Yeah.
Presumably, they are the developers there.
Yeah.
And they're holding it up. Yeah, it's neat. I'm not sure how big it can produce objects. Most likely, given that it's that small, it can only produce small objects. It only weighs 1.5 kilos.
Yeah. I'm not sure what
current
the...
Current going rate at €1,200. You can buy it, can you?
Yes, you can.
Or is this No, that's just the prototype. So, yeah, I don't think they actually have it available for sale yet. I think it's just the first prototype kind of thing.
Yeah. So they're saying...
I don't know. Don't quote me on that.
They're saying a 20th of a millimeter. So that would be 0.05 millimeters or 50.
Yep.
Wow.
That's
my brain is farting this morning. Micrometers or microns.
That's the resolution, is it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's 50,
right.
50 microns, which is pretty good.
How does that compare with the MakerBot, for example? Or
oh,
the
that's not
Rap
even
Rap.
Close. I mean, those things are, yeah. Are you talking about the resolution of the XY stage? I think this is actually...
It's not hard to get that sort of resolution on an XY plotter, but you need the extrusion, the plastic... extrusion thing,
that's the
gizmo,
limit.
Needs to be, you know, needs to squirt out enough, you know, a smaller amount of stuff.
Junk.
So, yeah.
Plastic goop.
Plastic ABS glue or whatever it is.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I'm sure that's the limit is your extrusion nozzle and your little thing there. So, I don't know.
Done a lot of 3D printing, huh, Dave?
Yeah, I'm a real industry expert, can't you tell?
Yeah, yeah. The way this one works is more like a photolithography process, it looks like. So basically they harden different areas, you know, so positive or negative resistance, and they actually harden the plastic, and then they probably somehow get the other stuff out of there.
Oh, right. So they start out with I'm going to have to look more. So what, they start out with a sheet, and then they... harden that, and then they layer for layer.
Yeah,
I guess.
So. Yep.
You can actually do that with laser as well. You can actually get a thin, you know, mylar or something, some sheet, and you can actually cut out all of your layers, and then you can stick the layers one on top of the other, and bingo, you get your 3D object.
Oh, cool.
That's, you know, that's a sort of a rough method to get a 3D printed object. And the MakerBot and things, it works exactly the same way. It builds things up each layer.
Yeah, layer by layer.
Layer upon layer. Yep. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good...
I like it. Good. And it actually looks like it's a fully refined product. It's in a nice custom case, and it's got, like, serial interfaces and, you know, power. And it just looks like the real deal, you know? Whereas the MakerBot still looks very do-it-yourself, you know?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, you put it together,
Well, it is, but it's yeah, this one just looks like a commercial product, really.
Yeah. And it looks like, you know, they're talking about in the article about, you know, printing real fine pitch stuff, so like for hearing aids and other things, so it's, it's interesting. Yep. I don't know about...
I'm sure it can't make... It looks like it can't make anything bigger than like an inch square or something like that.
Right, because of the actual platform where it's printing on, so...
Just the physical platform looks, you know, tiny, so... Anyway, that has its own niche, you know, if you need a custom little screw or a widget or something like that.
Yeah.
Bingo.
And I could see that, actually. So there's an article about convergent technologies, actually, on... where is it from? It's actually
wank, wank word of the week.
I know. Convergent technologies. It's actually from the IEEE, and I got it through... Ray Kurzweil's site, actually. So he's got, that guy's kind of bonkers, but it's
right.
He posts it posts some good stuff once in a while. So there's a interesting. They did a study about, you know, upcoming healthcare and electronics. You know, how they're going to merge together even more and where that kind of stuff is. And so one of them is bioelectronics, bio nano sensor technology, and neural engineering. So all that kind of like sensor interfacing to actually developing like nerve ending kind of sensors. So if you could actually interface with a nerve and then, you know, print some kind of sensor that could either focus light or smell.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think they figured that one out yet, but, so that, I mean, that,
No, they've got devices that can do that. I think
devices that can smell.
Not
I thought
sure
they had
I've read about those. Yeah, sure. I've
no.
read about those over the years.
Really? I didn't think so. I don't know, but this anyway, this kind of small 3D printer would be good for that. So another one on here is like a medical or bio robots with real small, you know, they always talk about like nanites and not nanites, that's the wrong word.
Yeah.
But you know, like things that actually are in your bloodstream and doing work on cells and all that other junk. And so you need small resolution printers to be able to make things that'll fit inside your body. So I guess I guess that could work, but it still has to probably get a little smaller yet. And I think a lot of the sensors are still on chip and that kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah. Okay. Mm. Cool.
Yeah. So that's interesting. We'll post a link to that five hotspots where medicine and technology are converging. I thought that was a pretty interesting article.
Awesome. And that blends well with my neuroelectronics.
That's right. Yeah. A little different.
Project.
Yeah. I don't think they listed children as a... hotspot where medicine and technology are converging.
I had quite a few commenters actually say that for the first minute or two, they thought it was actually a little doll or something like that. I was,
All right.
It was a little, you know, it was all fake. But no, I can assure you he's real. He wiggles around and cries. And
spits up everywhere.
And spits up everywhere, if you watch the outtake. Well, kind of. Not really outtakes at the end, but...
Gross.
Yes.
So
he did puke over himself at one point.
Oh, gross.
Which was lovely. Yeah, what do they talk about? You know, animals and children.
Yeah.
Never work with animals and children.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, in show business. Yeah.
Hmm.
So are you going to, you know, get the proverbial minivan? Are you, is that part of the future plans for you guys?
Minivan? Oh, God, no.
No?
No, two absolute tops. Although, no, we do have a new 7-seat. Car.
Oh, but, there you go, fancy.
That was only because it was, it just happens to have an extra two seats in the back. We wanted it for the room to lug stuff around in. So
that's a good idea.
No, we don't have a minivan.
Yeah. So have you seen the EE Times thing? Or I guess it's through UBM, but Brian Fuller's actually going to drive a Volt. Speaking of cars,
yes, he's driving a lucky bastard. He's driving a Chevy Volt.
Yeah.
What, from one side of the U.S. to the other, or is it around the U.S.? What's the
I think he said he was going, like, yeah, West Coast, New England kind of thing. And
right. And did he... I read somewhere it's going to take 12 months.
Yeah, I don't know how the heck he's doing that, but I, that's a lot of driving.
Not, that's a getaway from the wife trip, yeah, that is.
I guess so, unless she's going with him.
Sorry, honey, yeah. They're making me do this,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm going to drive an electric vehicle. Maybe he has to stop and wait for it to charge each time. Maybe that's why it's going to take 12
months. Gosh darn it, you know. Right, 12 months to get across.
Yeah.
Well, the first time I saw this and I didn't read the article, I thought, that's pathetically lame. But then I realized that, because they're a printed magazine, that all they'll do is they'll drive it across and they'll do some stupid article on it and that'll be it.
No.
Right, but no, they're actually doing a YouTube video and they're going to film it, which is, you know, better.
Yeah, Brian's good about that stuff. When I was at ESC, he was doing a bunch of videos there and stuff, so he's a fun guy.
Right. Which nobody actually watches, because I don't think anyone subscribes to those things. Yeah, but, well, that's the thing, they'll do this and they'll probably get, you know, 50 people watching, and it's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. I mean, they'll probably do some good stuff, but... You know, if they do fun stuff, we could point it out, and, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And if any electric car manufacturer is listening to the Amp Hour, I am available to drive a car across Australia, top gear, road trip
style. There you
style.
Go, yep.
And, I'll happily do it, and you'll get 8,000 or 10,000 viewers.
There you go. And
much more bang for your advertising buck.
And now thanks to a new experiment, you'll probably get spit up all over the back seat too. So
right.
But don't ask for it back, people. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's pretty slick looking. I mean, like, I really hadn't seen it much. I hadn't seen much about, I mean, I'd heard about it, but...
Oh, it's an ordinary looking car, isn't it?
The console inside, there's a really nice...
Oh, right, I haven't seen the console.
The 10-inch console, right. You know, it's similar to the Prius. Prius has that kind of thing too, but I don't know.
But maybe a bit further than the...
I'm always a sucker for, like, shiny lights. I'm like, ooh, shiny.
Yeah, right. Ooh, look, it lights up blue.
You know, I was impressed too, because the Volt... It got 100. You know, they do weird stuff for actual, like, mile per gallon ratings, but
yeah,
the Volt got a 106 miles per gallon rating, and I don't know what that'd be, kilometer per liter, however you guys do it.
How do you get that on a fully electric car?
Well, it has a range extender, so that's the other thing about it. So we've talked before on here about
But you're talking about per gallon.
Per gallon. So I think it's based on...
This thing actually uses petrol too, does it?
It does.
Is it a hybrid?
It does. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. So it's not fully electric. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any without a range extender, because you wouldn't be able to use it. I mean, I don't think Brian Fuller would be taking this car across the country if it only had a 90-mile charge, unless it really did take 12 months. Well, I meant
miles for today. In the U.S., you could drive at 90 miles, stay the night, recharge.
I guess so.
Next day.
I guess so. That would be a boring
trip. How many
trip.
Miles across is the U.S. and how many?
It's at least
90 per day, say 100 if you're lucky.
I think California to New England would be about 3,000 miles, so... Divide that by 90. And...
Right, okay, 300 days. Yeah, it's a year.
That would be horrible. I hope Ryan's not having to do that, but man.
Right.
Yeah, so it's got a range extender. I'm not sure how they actually calculate. Maybe they do some kind of funky calculation for actually taking into account charging, you know, like having equivalent energy
right,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Like gasoline has a very defined, you know, energy potential in it.
Yeah,
maybe they
did
it
right.
Like that, but. Yeah, so 106 miles per gallon, though.
Well, it kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it, to use the petrol one to get across the country instead of the...
Well, it'd be both, though. I mean, you charge it overnight. And
electric
then...
one? Oh, yeah, but no, I don't
well,
know.
And,
I think it's
and there's
lame.
Two different things with electric cars, though. So there's ones that actually drive the camshaft, which is actually making the wheels move, right? But I think on the Volt, it has a petrol or gasoline engine, which then actually charges, you know, turns an alternator, and then it charges the batteries. And I think...
that's how they all worked, is that they all have...
Not all of them.
Electric hub wheels, and the engine just recharges the battery.
That's how Volt works, I believe, but I don't think that's how all of
them
work.
No, well, I thought that's how the others
worked
as well.
I don't think that's how all of them work. So,
okay, well, that's not how the Toyota Prius works, but how the newer ones work.
Right.
Because the Toyota Prius is a heap of shit.
nah. Yeah, because that's different, though. So that's a car with battery backup, basically. That's how I think of a Prius. Whereas this is an electric car.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but we had talked on here before about Bob Simpson and how he does that. Remember we talked about the electric car conversions on here?
Yep.
So he actually has a direct drive where it actually drives on the camshaft. if I'm saying that right. I know nothing about cars. I think I've.
No, they're usually a hub. They don't. They usually have one motor per wheel. So it's a hub motor.
Well,
usually that's how they do it.
That's not how Bob
they
did
don't
it.
Actually drive a cam an existing camshaft and then
right.
drive the wheels through a camshaft. I don't think that's, you know. And there's the new Mitsubishi iMiEV or something like that. That I think that one's, you know, that one's pretty good. And yeah, I don't know. Everyone, every man and his dog seems to be jumping on the bandwagon these days, but you still can't buy them.
Well, you can. You just need a little bit of dough.
well, you can't buy them here. They're already... you need a lot of money, and there's a big waiting list, there's a 2-year waiting list, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. So we'll have to see what comes out of this. I don't know.
Anyway, I
hope there's not a, like, electric vehicle nuts out there who, like, you know, would learn us good, but... Maybe it would be helpful to know the difference about the you know, driving a camshaft versus an individual car or individual direct drive on a wheel. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
They have a lot more torque, though. They have a ton of torque.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, I've seen drag races. Maybe I'll be able to find the video of a drag race between this homemade...
Yeah, the White Lightning?
...electric car. It's like a little mini or something, right? And it takes on a full-on, you know, 800 horsepower, you know, big, you know, manly V8 engine, and it leaves it for dust.
Yep.
Absolutely leaves it for dust off the line.
Yeah.
Because they've got so much torque, it just drags the thing straight off the line and, you know... It just cannot compete.
Yeah.
Regular gas petrol engines cannot compete with that.
Yeah, there was a design news article about that. I just found it. It's it was called White Lightning, the car. It was this little...
Oh, yes. I think that's the name of it. Yep.
It was like this little tiny junker, basically. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But they called it slamming current, where they basically, you know, they dump many, many amps of current, I think hundreds of amps, actually, into...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but these motors just have so much torque, and it's available instantly, whereas petrol actually takes time to combust and, you know, and actually generate its energy and transfer that and stuff like that. So all that physics stuff.
Yeah. So they said 360 volts and 1,600 amps of current. So theoretically, that's 576,000 watts or 0.576 megawatts of power instantaneous. Damn.
And if it hits 1.21 gigawatts, you're in deep shit,
there you go.
And that's gigawatts, not gigawatts.
Gigawatts, of course, because it's a J, not a G, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. 1,500 foot-pounds of torque. I hate these units. I swear to God. Foot-pounds miles per gallon and RPM. But then amps. You know, amps is all SI-based, right? And volts. Kilovolts, megavolts, milliamp. Gosh darn imperial units.
It is the backwater USA, isn't it?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
So now, will you teach Sagan about imperial units? Will you let him know about the craziness of the U.S.? Will you teach him that, Dave?
I will.
Okay.
When I was a boy, we had imperial units and those crazy Americans.
Hopefully by the time...
I still use them.
By the time he grows up, he'll be able to call up, you know, Chris Gamble Jr. and... you know, the amp hour too, and they'll be able to talk SI units and actually be able to communicate about that stuff, because Lord knows I'm all miles and, you know, feet. Ugh.
Fantastic.
I hate it.
Hey, maybe in 10 years' time, there's a show.
I'd have to get making babies. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, buddy.
Get onto it, dude.
I think I'll...
I can tell you how it happens.
I don't... But not that kind of show, Dave.
I figured it out.
Breaking news, nerd has figured out procreation.
Yes. Love it. We've got like 7 minutes left. Should we have a chip of the week?
Chip of the week, yes. It's mine this week. I figured we'd trade off. So,
I don't know if we're taking turns each week. It's just whoever happens to put one on the list, really.
Yeah. Okay, so this week, it's not LT. This week is not linear technology, so take that, guys. You've finally been outmodded.
Because they didn't sponsor us, right?
Yeah.
There was no money forthcoming, so we dropped them.
Yeah, that's,
like a hot
that's
potato.
Not really the point of this, Dave. But,
I know.
So this week is OPA 171. So I'm an op-amp nerd. I love op-amps. And you know, there's a lot of stuff you can go out there for. You know, you can go out there for low offset voltage if you're doing like real low sensing of voltages. You can do low input bias currents if you're you know, measuring photodiodes or something like that. And basically, I wanted to find one that kind of does everything. And this one's been out since about fall of last year. But this is a TI part. It's an op amp. And like I said, I love op amps. But it's low noise and low offset drift and low bias current. You know, it kind of just has it all.
Oh, well, 475 microamps.
What?
Per amplifier, you can fly to the moon on 475 microamps.
Well, that's quiescent
current. Come on.
It's low power. I don't need low power for what I do. I mean, like, a lot of people need low power. That's not that bad. And you cannot fly on 475 microamps. Come on, Dave.
Oh, of course you can.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, right.
You can.
No, you can't. They were doing it with low processing power. They
all
weren't doing it with low current.
And back, dude.
No.
On 475 microamps.
No, you say that all the time, but you... No.
Bullshit. At a high enough voltage, of course you could.
Okay, high enough voltage. They weren't doing high voltage. They were doing high current.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So anyways, I like this one. It's got, you know, super tiny parts, so like SOT 553s, which I hate working with because they're so tiny, but...
Oh, they're a bitch,
yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it because it doesn't have like super crazy...
It's an op amp.
Yeah, it's an op amp, right? So you use it for everything. But I think this one's good enough that you could use it for a lot of different stuff, and it's not super, super expensive. It's probably more expensive than you usually like using, Dave, but you know, you're not going to be able to throw it into a consumer product, but if you're doing something fancy, you know, like some kind of fancy measurement circuit or something like that, or, you know.
Oh, it's got RFI filtered inputs.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn about that. I mean, I like RFI filtered inputs, but I feel like, you know, sometimes it actually messes with your circuit, because usually they do that with, you know, like a capacitor or a diode or something like that, and more so with the parts that have static electricity protection, right? Because then they do have a diode in there.
ESD protection, and,
I mean, most...
Yeah, that can... Yeah, the parasitics of that diode can screw with your...
Right, yes. You usually know, that's...
The performance of your circuit, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Have you actually tested the RFI input filtering capability? Have you stuck a GSM phone up next
to
it?
No, I haven't. That's a good test, though.
See if it filters that
out. Yeah, that's a good test.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if we've ever talked about all the different op amp things to look for on here, but I've talked about it a little bit on my site, I think, and you know, there's a lot of stuff to look for, and trying to balance it all out and go through DigiKey, it's like, oh, sometimes people just want to be like, tell me a part, good lord.
Yeah, I know.
I've done that a lot.
Oh, op amp, just try and search op amps on DigiKey or mouse. I know. It's just,
yeah, it's a
op
mess.
Amp, you know, you have, you know, we have found one of 10,000 devices. Yeah.
And the worst part about that is usually there's you know, because for one part, so like an OPA 171 might be on there. And then they also say, oh, well, there's four different package types, and there's leaded and non-leaded, and you can get it in a reel or in a tape or in, you know, whoever else. And so by the end of it...
Or a digi-reel.
Yeah, exactly. You get like 16 or 20 different options for the same part, and you're like, duh! just tell me a part, good lord, you know? They need like a super simple, stupid, like, you know, like everything. I mean, I know you could filter it all out too, but...
Oh, yeah, you can.
But when a beginner goes to a DigiKey or something like that, it's tough. It's tough for that kind of thing. Because you have to, if you don't know what you're looking for, what do you look for, right?
No, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for, then probably just any op amp will do. A 741 will probably do just fine and dandy.
Yeah, that's true. That's when you have like a, you know, a drawer of op amps sitting around the lab, like some TLO72s or something. Something like that.
You know, yeah, exactly. TLO72, yeah.
Yep. LM324s. Gotta love them.
And there's a reason that they're still around.
Yeah, yeah.
And people still use them is because they're, you know, a lot of the time that's all you need. You don't care if it's got 2 millivolts offset, you know, who cares? Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, right.
You know, or if it doesn't work rail to rail, whoop-de-doo.
Right, right.
You know,
it's tough. I don't think I'd pick an op amp every week for chip of the week, but this one struck my fancy, so I thought I'd call it out, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's been named and shamed, hasn't
it? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I like that one. Right. What about, so I mentioned, you know, ESR.
I love the photo.
Oh, the photo?
On the TI page. You can clearly see that they've photoshopped the part number onto a generic image of the SO8P. package, and they've got the text at the wrong angle, and it really looks stupid.
Really?
Yeah, if you go to the... I'll send you the...
Yeah, I got it here.
Yeah, you've got the link?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They put, like, a slant on it. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's got a slant on the text, yeah. And it just looks...
That looks a little weird.
Amateur hour yeah. at Texas Instruments.
Ah, it's a 3D model anyway, so they're...
Yeah, I know. It's yeah. just a generic 3D model. And they've actually probably got some sort of script that actually is yeah. typing the number, and it just overlays the text automatically yeah. onto that image, and that's the image they save for the website. Yep,
has SOIC part number or yeah, so you can actually generate yeah. this picture then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. It's for reference only, Dave.
Right. Damn, my parts don't look like that. They must be counterfeit.
I know. So I mentioned ESR, protection and the input of stuff, but you had an item on here about people have taken you to task about that on some of your reviews before. I wanted to mention that before we close out the show.
Well, our hour is up, but we can mention that very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, you had asked...
What was it? Yes.
You had asked, do people actually do good grounding practices when they're working at their bench? And
I'm talking always.
Always.
Do it. Right. Because I was taken to task that I didn't wear an ESD strap.
Yeah.
Even though I had an ESD mat, didn't wear an ESD strap when I was doing the teardown. And in theory, fair enough. I've worked at companies where you would literally, it was a sackable offense.
Really?
If you entered a lab, yep, and you did not have your ESD strap on and you did not test it every time you entered the lab. You would actually get fired if you did it.
Wow.
Sorry?
It was like a demerit or yeah. like you just got tossed out on your ass?
No, you actually got tossed out of the company. You were fired instantly.
Wow.
It was they made it very clear one day it was a dismissible offense
wow.
instantly. Regardless of who you were, how important you were for the company, because the boards in there were worth, you know, they were all one-offs, and if you blew them, you know, the whole $10 million project has gone to shit.
Wow.
You know, so they took it really seriously. And yeah, and granted, I agree, right? Technically, yes, you should be using your ESD strap, but I do it because it's a real-world test. Most people who are going to get this multimeter or this product, they're going to take it apart to have a sticky beak inside, aren't they? And they're not going to wear ESD protection, and quite frankly, it's part of the test. If a product fails ESD, I've never killed a product in over 20, 30 years... by taking it apart without an ESD strap. Now, that's not to say it's not going to happen, but if a multimeter died
right.
by me doing that, you're not just going to come out and say, well, oh, it's of course it's going to die because you didn't wear your ESD strap, idiot. Well, no, it's not a robust... You know, that could be indicative of some other problem, right?
So you're saying you should scuff your feet on the floor and
yeah,
intentionally
exactly.
stick your finger over
and,
top of the board.
That's right. Get my nylon jumper out.
I call this the 4 kilovolt test. Zap.
Right. It's the human body model
there
test.
There you go.
Zap.
Yeah.
You know, but come on.
Also known
seriously.
As the idiot board designer test, right? So if you've designed your board poorly or you don't have the right kind of, you know, ground planes and everything, then, yeah, you might be really sensitive and you might have some problems. So.
Yeah. Most fully assembled boards are fairly robust. You know, they're not foolproof, but they're fairly robust. Hell, the whole Chinese computer and toy gadget industry is built on no ESD protection,
yeah.
right? And it's, you know, and they usually survive. Well, you know, there might be some infant mortality and some failures and all that sort of stuff, but it's not a big deal. And anyone who calls me out on it, I'm going to call them a hypocrite because I can guarantee you they've done it themselves, right? There is no way every time they open a product, they walk into their bench and they put on their ESD strap and their ESD coat and their mat and their everything else.
Right.
And then,
And
even if I did that, I'd still get taken to task by anal retentive people who said, oh, you're not using an ionizer. You haven't got your lab coat on. You haven't done this. You don't have an anti-static floor mat. You haven't static-treated your chair.
I'm in
you
my garage.
You know,
come on, people.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Because
anyway.
A lot of the parts, I mean, they have it built in and, you know, they see that voltage build up on a pin and it's just going to dump it through a diode. So that takes care of itself a lot of the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And not like...
And quite frankly, I'd be very concerned if a product I took apart, especially when I was actually still using an ESD mat, you know, so I'm actually taking more precautions than most people would.
Yeah.
And yes, I do occasionally wear my strap, you know, if I deem it to be important. But if I'm doing a teardown of a board, I typically don't wear it out of sheer laziness. And I think, well, it's not a bad test anyway.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, tough tip.
Yep.
That's what I'm going to do. Anyway, I'm calling everyone a hypocrite if they challenge me on
hypocrites
that.
All around.
Do you wear an ESD strap when you take something?
I do at work. Apart? Not at home, though. I just, you know,
exactly.
Touch a case.
Just take apart and have a sticky bead, don't you?
Yeah, just touch a case.
You take your chances.
Yep. Yeah,
you just take, you know, like you don't go, you know, you're actually aware of it because we're engineers. We're aware that, oh, okay, yes, we've just been shuffling our feet across the carpet and we've got our nylon underwear on today, and, you know.
Yeah, some Saran wrap underwear.
And you know, so we're aware of that sort of stuff. So, yes, when I'm aware of that, I don't deliberately go out and try and zap the boards. Goodness sake. Anyway.
Yes. Well.
End rant.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out whether or not I should say this, but I think it's clear, folks, that in all but one thing in his life, Dave uses protection.
Right.
See you next week, folks.
Bye.
Yeah.